stations.
Oh, yeah.
Time to talk NBA with Keith Smith from Spot Rack and the Front Office Show. And on Twitter X at Keith Smith NBA. Here's Keith Smith talking basketball with Bryant and Brett.
Keith Smith joins us now from Spot Track and the Front Office Show to talk the NBA and plenty to talk about with the NBA playoffs going on right now. But Keith, we got to start with the Boston Celtics last night coming up short as the Heat tied that series 1-1 with an unbelievable three-point shooting performance from them. They go 23 for 43 from three. That's 53.5%. What happened last night? What were your big takeaways from the Celtics' loss last night in Game 2?
I think the game plan for Boston was to let certain Miami Heat players shoot, and that sound enough if you go off of their regular season numbers,
sure.
And they outshot that. And Boston then never adjusted. Once those guys got rolling and going, they never changed that up, and they basically let Miami beat them. But today's NBA often comes down to who shoots better from three, who makes a better percentage, and who makes more of them. And the Celtics got beat at their own game. All year long, they have been a high-volume and a high-percentage three-point shooting team. And Miami's defensive game plan, very different from Game 1, which involved a lot of doubling, a lot of sending two on the ball, which opened up Boston, and Boston hit a whole bunch of three-pointers, as they usually do. This time, Miami straight switched. They basically baited the Celtics into, hey, why don't you try to go inside? And Boston did it and did it and did it, and they didn't get up the number of three-pointers they need to get up. They get outscored by 33 points on three-point makes, and that's going to always be the difference in a game this now in the NBA, the way the game's played.
Keith, I'm not surprised that Miami took a game. I would not be surprised if they take another game. I was surprised to do it from start to finish on the parquet.
Yeah, I understand that. I think this is what Miami does. So that part doesn't necessarily surprise me as much anymore. I don't think there's anybody on that Heat roster who walks into Boston with any form of fear about, you know, what they might be having to do and playing there. They've all played there plenty over the, you know, last several years, and that's, you know, been a big part of it for them. So I think, you know, now we're in a spot for the Celtics where they got to go get a couple in Miami. They've done that over the years as well. So these are just two teams that they when they get together, you know, it's probably going to be, you know, much more of a fight than any of the records and numbers may indicate.
I said earlier, and I've said it a bunch through the years, I think it's almost inconceivable for anybody like Memphis or Minnesota or New Orleans, Charlotte, that team you want to become. Don't try to be the Celtics or the Lakers or even the Spurs. Try being the Miami Heat.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that. I think, you know, it gets a little, the whole Heat culture stuff for me, it's just propaganda. It's stuff people say, you know, where I'm like, okay, yeah, great. Everybody, you know, who wins has great culture. Every team works hard. Like, they, you know, and then that whole ridiculous paragraph they put in the paint, you know, I mean, this is just, you know, we're leaning into it, and their fans think it's amazing. They eat it up and go crazy for it. But my thing is, like, that overlooks the fact that they're in Florida, in a city where NBA players love and love to live, and there is great weather and no state taxes.
It's
all hard work. Like, come on. They have all the advantages of L.A., but being a cheaper place to live with, you know, just as good a weather and those kind of things. So it's just a weird thing to me that we, you know, have turned the Heat into, oh my gosh, this, you know, scrappy small market group that's become that. Now, they're very good, don't get me wrong, but I think what teams just need to focus on, be the best version of what you are. You know, the team that I always say is be the Spurs if you're a small market team. The Spurs dominated the league for two decades.
Yeah.
They were, you know, in the mix every single year for two straight decades. And, you know, no one's ever going to confuse them for a big market franchise. So if you're any one of the small ones, that's where I'd be looking to say, get a draft, develop, retain the right guys, add the right guys around them, And it sure helps if you hire one of the best all-time coaches.
No, absolutely. The second game from last night, Thunder made it look easy against the Pelicans. And really, that first game, it was the Thunder looking like a team that was extremely young and didn't have any playoff experience, and it felt like, you know, wanted to you know, grow that lead late in game one, but just could never really separate themselves, and New Orleans made it a very interesting game late. But last night, that was certainly not the case. What have been your biggest takeaways from that series for both the Thunders and the Pelicans without Zion?
Yeah, the Thunder are just a far better team without Zion in the mix. It's, you know, that first game, I think we saw a little bit for a handful of the Thunder guys, like, oh, this is what the playoffs are. Okay. Sure. But they got the win, right? And that's all that really matters at the end. And then they came out second game, like, all right, well, we've been there, done that now. You know, we know what the playoffs are like, and now let's just go play. And they absolutely destroyed New Orleans. New Orleans doesn't have a lot of on-ball creation without Zion in the mix. C.J. McCollum's a good player, but I think we've seen for years C.J. McCollum is best if he's your second or third best guy. Brandon Ingram, I don't know what is going on with him. We're at a point with Brandon Ingram where I don't know that I would even be considering discussing anything approaching a max extension with him if I was the Pelicans, because I'm just not sure he's earned anything like that. And something's going to have to give eventually with New Orleans. They're not going to be able to just pay everybody and become this super-duper expensive team, and it's starting to look like Brandon Ingram may be playing himself out of there with some of these performances. And then, you know, if we want to give the Thunder a little bit more credit, it's just a really good, balanced offensive team. It's a whole bunch of guys who can attack off the dribble. They put shooting on the floor pretty much at all five positions at all times, and they just keep everything really spaced out. They're not a great passing team, but they keep it very simple. It's drive, kick, and move. Like, that's all you got to do sometimes.
Yeah, Oklahoma City, they've made it work, and they've got that good young nucleus again, like they had once upon a time. DeSam Presti, for all the accolades around him, though, he's got to hold that Larry O'Brien trophy someday to be considered one of the greats, doesn't he?
I don't know. It's funny that you asked that, because I had this conversation with someone today, actually, about the whole idea of people have to win one to be considered a great. And I kind of get it. I kind of understand that. I think the challenge comes in is, what if Sam Presti decides, yeah, you know what, I do need to win one. I'm going to go be the GM of the Lakers. Well, then no one's going to give him any credit, because everybody's going to say, well, you didn't get it done in Oklahoma City. So I don't care. It's going to be the same conversation as it was with Kevin Durant, which was, well, Kevin Durant can never be one of the great players until he wins a championship. So Kevin Durant decided, I'm going to go win a championship. I think where it all falls apart with that discussion for me is, I'm fine if we want to keep the condition simple. Either you have a title or you don't, and that's what we'll discuss. Where it falls apart is, well, you didn't win it the way I wanted you to win it, so it doesn't count quite the same. That's where I struggle with the, you know, great conversation of, you know, where does this guy rank all time and those kind of things. So it just, you know, becomes almost a matter of opinion and discussion. But I think, you know, him building two young title contenders that hopefully ownership won't get in the way of here the second time, that's pretty good stuff for me.
Did you have that conversation today directly about him? Or if it wasn't him, I bet it was about Daryl Morey, wasn't it?
It wasn't actually. It was actually about players had it. But then it turned into, the discussion was, is Eric Spoelstra, you know, really as good as we think, or has he benefited from great teams? And, you know, my point was, well, he's won with kind of all kinds of teams. It's, you know, really good ones, ones that aren't so great. Like, I think I've probably even said it here on your show, for my money, he's the best coach in the league now, and I don't know that it's really particularly close. But then that turned into a whole bigger discussion about, you know, who has a lot of stake here? You know, where do people rank? And one of the players that was discussed was Chris Paul. You know, can Chris Paul be considered one of the greatest point guards of all time if he doesn't win a championship? And my point was, yeah, he absolutely can. Like, it's not a prerequisite to have to win a championship. And my challenge is, so if Chris Paul sticks around until he's 45 years old, and in his last year when he's not playing for, you know, whoever wins the championship, he's just kind of there along for the ride, like, we're all going to be, well, he got his ring, now put him where, you know, put him on the rankings. But before, we had to knock him down six or seven spots. It's just a weird way of kind of calibrating these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when you look at this Thunder team, while we're on this topic, how far do you think they can go? I think last night was a statement win for them, but you know, everyone talks about you still got Denver on your side. You know, there are a lot of other teams that have that experience, have gone far. How far do you think this young group can go?
Yeah, I think they can get to the West Finals, especially if the Nuggets are standing there. I don't think they'll beat the Nuggets.
Yeah.
I know they've had success against them, but I just it is a different thing. And you know, beating Nikola Jokic four times in a seven-game series is hard for anybody. And I don't love necessarily the way they match up with Denver.
Yeah.
In terms of a playoff series, I think Jokic will figure a lot of things out that they want to do schematically, and then you don't have enough answers to say, all right, let's just bring talent and size. It's just they don't have that on the roster. So that's where I think it starts to become the challenge. But, yeah, getting to the West Finals at this point in this team's arc and development, that'd be a fantastic outcome because they are so young. And you need to look at it and say, all right, not only are we young and loaded with all this talent, but we've got the ability to go improve. Well, they should have $30 million in cap space this summer. You know, let's go get, you know, that last piece and it really pushed us over the top. So when we come back next year, we're really ready to go. And that's, I think, what's scary, you know, for especially the teams in the Western Conference. They're not going away anytime soon. And the guy a little bit south of them in San Antonio, he's going to have an awful lot to say about the conference here for a number of years to come, too.
Keith, while we were talking about Sam Presti, I Googled him. I didn't know he was the Emerson College Boston boy.
How about that?
Yeah, he is. I don't know if you saw, there's a book out right now. I think it just came out or it's coming out soon. It's about Division III being like a pipeline to folks in the NBA. Not players, obviously, but coaches and front office executives. Mm-hmm. And one of the people who's profiled in there is Sam Presti. He's a Massachusetts kid. He grew up in Carlisle, Massachusetts. And one of the interesting stories that didn't make the book was they went back and found when he was 16 years old, he sent a letter to the editor for the Boston Globe that was printed that explained it's time for the Celtics to tear down the roster. This was in, I believe it was 92, something like that. And it was, it's time to tear down the roster and start all over. And the guy they should be looking to go get, Jason Kidd. This was when Jason Kidd was still at Cal.
Wow.
And he said, I know he didn't really shoot well, but this guy's going to develop into a great player. He's going to be an all-time great point guard. And I was 16-year-old Sam Presti writing a letter to the editor, which I think probably foretold a little bit of where this all went for him.
Probably wouldn't have been such a bad idea for the Celtics then, would it?
Well, wouldn't have been. Yeah, especially then. They were struggling a little bit back in those days.
Wow. Yeah. Keith Smith with us from SpotTrack. He's on our Sissy's Log Cabin guest line, as all our guests appear on. And everybody's got circle tonight. The Knicks having to go to Philly and get a good ration of you-know-what that they're going to catch there. The Philadelphia is the most dangerous down two team, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just, you know, they were right in both of those games. They are going to get it home. They need their role players to play better. Joel Embiid, despite being very limited, he's given them good production. Tyrese Maxey's been pretty good. A lot of the other guys have struggled, so they need Tobias Harris, Nick Batum, Buddy Hield, Cam Payne, even Kyle Lowry to an extent. Those guys need to step up and give them better minutes. That's going to be really, really important for Philadelphia if they're going to even this up. And really, you know, for all these teams tonight and over the next couple of nights and days here, Philadelphia, the Lakers, and the Magic tonight, you have to win. Otherwise, it's over. I mean, I hate to put it that simple, but nobody's ever done it. We saw the Celtics come really close last year, down 3-0, but you're down 3-0 without home court advantage. You don't even have that to lean on if you're these teams. So these are do-or-die games that expect to see, you know, all these teams that went down 0-2 on the road. This should be their absolute best performances, because otherwise, you start thinking about, well, maybe the next time I get on a plane, I'm headed to Cancun or, you know, the beach or back home or wherever for the summertime.
You mentioned the Magic. They go tonight, first game of the night. Have you been surprised at how this series has gone? Cavaliers kind of dominating those first two games.
To an extent, I thought the Magic would play a little bit better, but this is all the worst fears for the Magic realized all at once. They don't have enough on-ball creation. They don't have enough shooting. That's their struggle. They're kind of hanging in these games defensively. they're giving themselves a chance on that end. But Cleveland also, you're seeing the Cavs now. This group, they went to the playoffs last year. They saw what it was like, and you saw them come out extremely focused and ready to go. And, hey, this is what we're going to do. And Evan Mobley, this is why we've all been so high on this guy, because it's, all right, if this is what he can do, like let's go. This means Evan Mobley, you know, really could be something. So I think the Magic, again, they're going to get a bump from the home crowd tonight. This is, I was explaining to someone last week, I went out the first day of game one, and I had not seen that much Magic stuff out and about in the city in years. It had been since they went to the finals in 2009, and the people here love it. What's different even from then, you know, now here 15 years later, you have entire generations of people who grew up here, and they grew up here as Magic fans, and now they're raising Magic fans of their own. And that's pretty cool that now you're seeing that kind of, you know, first and second generation of people who grew up loving this team. And that's when it starts to get a little bit special, because when I first moved here to Orlando, you know, over 20 years ago, nobody was from here. So no one was really met. We all came with the teams we liked. And then now, then it's turned over the last, you know, couple generations of fan groups, and it's been a lot of fun to watch that. So they're going to give you a good bump, and I think they're going to give the Cavs a real challenge tonight.
Keith, we talk about, Brian and I talk about that all the time here on we think after LeBron, after Steph Curry, after Kevin Durant, are there any others, Brian? We think that will be the end of our fans here locally that are for the Grizzlies, you know, most every night, but they go to see those stars. You know, when we first got a team, I mean, you'd go to a game against the Lakers, and it was 80% building Lakers. Now it's about 30% Lakers. We think we're getting that out of our system. Orlando's got a head start on us, but we're trying to get into that next generation here.
Yeah, it's the same thing, and I remember, what was it, a couple years ago now when John Morant did the whole thing with the kid in the Steph Curry jersey, and it was, hey, bring that in and get one of mine, you know, get a Grizzly jersey, let's go, and that's great, right? That's how you get your fans, you know, that's how you win people over. Now, you also got to win, right, because if you're trying to tell everybody, hey, come be a fan of us, and we're just sitting here losing game after game after game, and it's not quite there, then you're going to struggle, and that's been one of the challenges for the Magic. They've had a couple of, you know, really, you know, fun bumps. They got, you know, Shaq and Penny very early on, and that was a team that everybody was like,
Tracy McGrady.
And that team ended before we were even ready. Then, yeah, you got McGrady and you signed Grant Hill, and everybody's like, here we go. Grant Hill never panned out because he never got healthy again while in Orlando, and that all, you know, went away. And then you had the Dwight Howard era, which was pretty good. That was actually the longest sustained success the team has had, and now you're back to, all right, hey, we got Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. We got a guy in his second year and a guy in his third year who are pretty good players, and again, much like the Thunder, now they're not on the same level as the Thunder. I'm not trying to say that, but they have a whole bunch of cap flexibility this summer where we're getting real close to time of, hey, we got to add now, because once you start extending and re-signing guys like y'all learned in Memphis, it starts getting really hard to add talent around that guy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Keith, the last game tonight, Nuggets and Lakers. I know a lot of people have been keeping a close eye on this series. Lakers end up losing the last game. Nuggets come back from being down 20 points. I thought it was really impressive that the Lakers able to get up by 20 on the road in Denver. But after that game, AD makes the comments, quote, "We have stretches where we don't know what we're doing on both ends of the floor," and that's now you know, gone kind of viral. Darvin Ham responded to it yesterday. What did you make of those comments and how this series has played out?
Yeah, if you're saying something like that, immediately everybody goes to fire the coach.
Yeah.
Like, how can you not have these guys ready? And a lot to me said, no, you've got some veteran players there that then they're freelancing and they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I'm sorry, if we're, you know, 80 plus games into the season, you don't know what you're doing on both ends of the floor. That's on everybody collectively. Like that's a, you know, horrible look, and you know, no one should feel bad for you. I honestly don't know what's to be gained by saying that, because you don't look good as the player.
No.
The coach doesn't look good. The whole organization looks like a bunch of idiots. And now, if it's because they were trying a bunch of stuff and none of it's working, that's a whole different story. And that's a Nikola Jokic, Denver Nuggets problem that they give everybody. But Yeah, I mean, the Lakers are, I think, the Lakers have gotten really good over the last couple of years at making excuses for why they aren't, you know, better than what they are.
Well, that's the truth.
And this year was, we have a whole bunch of injuries. Well, you know what? AD and LeBron played most of the game. So, you know, I get it. Gabe Vincent's a nice player, but no one's going to cry. Like, I say all the time when that gets brought up of, okay, yeah, go talk to Memphis about injuries. Like, go, you know, they're playing, you know, over half the season with, you know, two-way guys and 10-day hardship guys and everything else. Like, no one wants to hear that from Lakers fans, but that's just, you know, that's what they do. They always have an excuse, you know, and now it's after game two. It's, well, the refs hate us. They're out to get us, because we all know the NBA would love nothing more than to put the Denver Nuggets through than the Los Angeles Lakers in terms of, you know, franchises there. It's a lot of, you know, baloney, and I think the players buy into it too, which makes the fans then double and triple down.
Well said. And Brian, you're going to be a little mad at me over this one. The Lakers are like the Cowboys.
Mm.
There's always an excuse.
Well,
Kentucky basketball.
I
haven't followed the Cowboys close enough to say.
Well,
anymore,
he's not wrong.
So
I'll tell you that.
Yeah. I'll
I'm sorry,
Bob. Okay. Okay.
Keith, will you get a chance to be in the building tonight in Orlando?
I'm actually not going to go tonight because of the three game. You guys know if you go to a game, you don't leave right after.
Right.
You know, if I go, that game will end, and I'll be there until, you know, midnight, and then I'm going to miss three games. You know, I'll miss the other two games. If they win tonight, I will go for game four, just to kind of be in there. And that's a little bit more of the staggered weekend start, so I can kind of get in, get to the game I want to see, and then get out. But yeah, tonight I'm going to give it a miss.
You got a good plan. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, I've been doing this for a while, so I have a pretty good sense of, you know, when to go. I do wish it was, you know, only a two game night, because the challenge for me is I'm going to come home and then I'm going to want to watch the other games. If there's only one, I can get home at midnight, watch that game, and go, or get up very early and go to watch two. That starts to really throw everything off. So, you know, poor me. You know, no one's crying any tears about it.
Good deal.
True veteran. You know what you're doing. Well, Keith, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy this week, and we'll do it again next week.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Keith. Keith Smith joining us to talk the NBA, and plenty to talk about with all of the storylines, all of what's going on in these playoffs. I'll mention it again, three games tonight. Like Keith was saying, Cavs Magic start us off 6 o'clock on NBA TV. Then you've got your doubleheader on TNT. Knicks 76ers at 6:30, and then Nuggets and Lakers at 9 o'clock on TNT as well. Well, let's go ahead and get to a break. We're almost to about 2.5 hours until the NFL draft, and there's plenty of news out there as we're starting to get to that time where more and more rumors, more and more reports are coming to the surface. So let's get to a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about everything going on with the NFL draft.
Be sure to follow us at Sports56WHBQ on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to watch live video of our shows, stay up to date with station events, and have chances to win prizes. Don't miss out on anything that's going on. Follow us at Sports56WHBQ. Now back to sports time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Hours 30 minutes and 9 seconds away from the start of the NFL draft. Obviously, maybe 2 hours and 50 minutes until Caleb Williams is announced as the draft pick, because we know how they like to take their time with that first pick. But it's going to be a fun night in the NFL draft. Plenty of rumors out there, plenty of things going on about what could happen tonight in the draft. And I saw, while we were talking to Keith, Diana Russini, within the last hour, tweeted this out. The 49ers have had conversations with teams, including one team picking in the top 10, about trading either of their prized wide receivers, Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel, in an effort to move up in the first round, per sources. So it looks like the 49ers trying to be active getting inside the first round.
That will be the fun stuff when the trades start happening. And we think we're going to see one fairly quickly with New England in the third slot.
Sure.
They're not a quarterback. They're not a this year's draft or maybe even next year's draft away from being in the playoffs. New coach out with, you know, the greatest coach in the history of the NFL, Bill Belichick, and in with the new coach, Jerry Mayo, from played college football at Tennessee. So they're going to be patient, and they've got a stockpile. So I don't think they'll stay with that pick. Another fun one: where will Marvin Harrison go?
Yeah,
and he's most people are thinking he's going to, you know, be like his dad and just walk right into the Hall of Fame someday.
Yeah, no, certainly when you have that, you know, kind of lineage, I know a lot of people excited about him, and so it'll be interesting. I mean, you know, we were talking months ago about him being the second pick, and now that has changed a lot because of these quarterbacks in the draft, and I think, you know, depending, you know, like you said about what the Patriots do with that third pick, and they have been very vocal that they're open. Now, I'm sure the price tag to move up to three is going to be a lot more than what people want to spend to get there. But we'll see. You know, I think Marvin Harrison's going to be the first receiver taken, and I think surely will be in the top five, but it'll be interesting to see where he lands and sees how they work. And then, you know, speaking of wide receivers, you got to think about what do the Bears do with that second pick. Now we're hearing that they're open offers for the number nine pick, but certainly could go out there and draft a receiver to go with Caleb Williams. I know Caleb Williams was asked about it yesterday, and the first thing he said is he wants them to draft an offensive lineman, and then said, you know, what's, you know, one of those wide receivers that are still on the board. I'd love
where he won't get hit like Bryce Young did.
Exactly. So it's gonna be really interesting. I mean, that top 10 this year I think is gonna be extremely active, both with trades and kind of the unknown with what some of these teams do.
Our friend Bo Marchant, that joins us every Tuesday, just sent us all his final mock, and he has Marvin Harrison going to the Chargers.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be great to be at that first Harbaugh Harrison meeting?
Yeah.
Man, we butted heads the last few years as tough as you can at a college level.
Yeah.
Now let's make something special together.
Almost sacrilege for Jim Harbaugh, just coming off of Michigan, getting the tattoo 15-0 on his shoulder, and then going out there and drafting a Buckeye. I mean,
and he's hated Ohio State since he was a tot with his dad coaching at Michigan.
Yeah, no.
But he wants to win, and he knows it's his job.
Sure, definitely wants to win, and you know, will do what he needs to do to do that. Now, another thing that I find interesting in Bo's mock draft, he has the Giants trading up to number four and taking Joe Alt, the offensive lineman from Notre Dame. I know we've talked a lot this week about Alt, especially earlier when we were talking to Greg Arias, because that's a guy that you see a lot of mock drafts out there that if he's still available at seven, that's who the Titans would take. So, you know, really interesting there. But it's gonna be a fun first round. And then he has the Titans. Speaking of the Titans, going out and taking Brock Bowers from Georgia, that'd be fun.
It would be, and that's not what most think the Titans are going to do. Most are saying offensive lineman, probably Joe Alt, the big Notre Dame lineman, whose dad played forever with Kansas City. But we'll see. It'll be a lot of intrigue with the draft tonight. And Bo's got it laid out great at his site, collegetopro.com.
Yeah.
If you wonder why the Giants have not been very good, here are their first-round draft picks since 2019. DeAndre Baker, Dexter Lawrence, Daniel Jones in 19, Andrew Tucker in 20, Kadarius Toney in 21, Kayvon Thibodeau in 22, and Deontay Banks in 23.
Oh,
it's,
man,
not many hits.
No, it has not been great. So maybe they are aggressive this year and try to, you know, figure out how do we make sure we definitely land somebody that's going to be a big hit for us. And
have you peaked at the Cowboy pick, according to Bo?
No, I'm getting down there. I'm still kind of looking at all of this other stuff. Very intriguing. Let's see what he has with the Cowboys. Where am I? 22.
And Bo is on the IU trade train.
Is he? What does he have on that?
He's got projected trade for the Colts for Brandon Ayuk.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting. That would be, you know, Aiyuk to Indy would be certainly something. He has Cowboys taking an offensive tackle. I would love that. You know, I think offensive line, you go back a couple years ago, was the you know, strongest part of the Cowboys. And you had all those all pro offensive linemen, and now a lot of those guys either not with him anymore, retired, and so definitely I think Cowboys got to go out and draft no linemen tonight.
For as much criticism as general manager Jerry gets, the Cowboys drafts haven't been bad.
No, not at all. No, he's done really,
I mean, they've
well.
They've hit.
Yeah, no, certainly have. And, you know,
18 people passed by Micah Parsons. You think that would happen if we redrafted?
No, not at all. Not at all.
I 16 mean, watched CD Lamb go by.
And I remember both of those drafts and kind of going, wait a minute.
And Jerry Jones, he really gets kind of around him, hung around him, the flirtation with Johnny Manziel. Well, they didn't take him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point.
Who among us didn't have a flirtation with Johnny Football?
I mean, that's a great point.
Man, I know I did, man.
Yeah, we were all there.
I thought Johnny was going to do something, man.
Johnny Hill on these airways, me and Rob Fisher were, I was going to buy a home jersey, road jersey, every jersey you could think of if they got Johnny Football.
Good Lord.
We got as far out there as you can get and just broken off behind us.
Yikes.
Well, what did Johnny Football end up with? Three touchdown passes in his pro career?
Something like that.
Yeah. I think I'm too far off.
Not great, but hey, you know, made for a
in his NFL career.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, made for a great Memphis Express jersey, a Johnny Manziel jersey.
And I didn't go see him with Express. I went to two or three Express games and did not see Johnny Football.
Too bad. Missed an experience that will be talked about for generations.
I shorted him. 7 touchdown passes.
Wow, how about that?
7 TDs, 7 interceptions.
7 up, 7 down. How about that?
1 rushing touchdown.
2-6 record.
Good Lord. Not very good.
Johnny Football.
I saw this earlier today.
22nd pick, first round.
Well, you know, something.
I didn't know he lasted that long.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that?
I didn't remember it.
I saw this earlier today, and I thought this was very interesting. A NFL draft story from the 2016 draft. Johnny, you'll get a kick out of this.
Yeah.
The Chiefs were picking at number 28 in the 2016 draft, and they were targeting Memphis quarterback Paxton Lynch. But the Broncos traded up to number 26 and got, obviously, drafted Paxton Lynch. So because of that, and the Chiefs were thinking about trading, but the third-round pick that they had that they would have been able to offer up for Paxton Lynch had been taken away for tampering that offseason in free agency. So as a result, KC traded down from 28 to 37. Johnny, do you know who they picked with that 37th pick?
Ooh, my mind went blank. Who they picked?
Chris Jones, the defensive tackle.
Oh, wow.
Traded down and drafted Chris Jones. And
Hall
then
of Famer.
The following year, because they did not end up getting a quarterback that draft, they traded up from 27 to number 10, drafted Patrick Mahomes. What a story. I saw that this morning on Twitter.
Great story. I missed on Paxton Lynch, too. I mean, all of us around here.
Yeah.
The day of the big game, the big Tiger Ole Miss game in 2015, the throws he made that day.
Oh, man.
And I said that year, that day was the best quarterback performance I saw all that year.
It was incredible. I mean, I still go back and watch highlights from that game because, I mean, some of those throws were unbelievable.
That throw to the northeast corner to Mose
Frazier.
I mean, you could put ever strand of laundry you ever had on that.
Oh, yeah.
And that day, there was a decided northeast wind. Of course, you know, at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, it's the candlestick of football stadiums.
Sure is.
There's not a flag blowing in the same direction ever at that stadium.
No, not at all.
But that day, they were all coming out of the north, a little northeast. So that's kind of coming from Hollywood,
across
Central and Hollywood, and it didn't bother him a lick.
man, it was an unbelievable performance. And, you know, so fun story there for the draft, including Paxton Lynch and, you know, one of those first-round quarterbacks.
You never know what door opens, do you?
No, you don't.
And primary to that day, you know, Chris Jones famously went to Mississippi State.
Right.
But on National Signing Day, had faxed in his letter, national letter of intent to Ole Miss with his dad's signature on it. You have to have I don't know if it's both are kind of the primary parent. He was living with his mom.
Sure.
And so that didn't stand, that didn't hold.
Wow.
And Ole Miss really in the recruitment, Freeze wanted those five stars Robert Kimdiche. Robert was a good player.
Sure.
Robert was a fun loving guy. Uh-huh. He was. But not the NFL career that Chris Jones had.
No.
And could have had them both. And we know what happened to Robert that day. And Freeze trying to be offensive whiz kid puts him in at running back, and he gets dropped on his head and has a concussion.
Yep, I remember that. Remember that moment very, very well.
That was some game.
It was an unbelievable game. It was one of the all-time games for me, at least.
And Brian, that day, I want to say, did we kick at 11 or 11:30? It was early.
It was 11. Yeah, it was first game.
I got there really, really early, mm-hmm. just, you know, to get ahead of traffic, just to make sure. And boy, I think I'm really getting there early. And when I got out of the car, it felt like being at SEC. I thought, uh-oh.
Yeah.
We walked into a bus. Then get up 14-0 and, okay, felt a little more comfortable, and then it was all Tigers.
Oh, yeah. It was all Tigers after that. I remember that. I tried to convince my dad to take us to the game, and he said, no, I don't think so. I don't think we'll be able to make it. Ole Miss goes up 14-0. I come downstairs. He says, "Bet you're glad we didn't go now." And I go, "Oh, Memphis is still going to win this game. I mean, they've played well. They've just missed on a couple things. They're going to win this game." And sure enough, came back and won it.
Sure so did.
I wish I had been there.
Someday. That was after Ole Miss had beat Bama at Bama.
That's right. So a crazy day. Last thing I want to get to on the NFL draft, did you see the clip of J.J. McCarthy? I don't know if it was yesterday or early this morning, but he was on the Rich Eisen show.
He's making the rounds. Yeah, I did see
it. Interview, and Rich Eisen asked him, "Have any idea where you might go tonight? And, you know, maybe what team might be interested in him?" J.J. McCarthy straight up just goes, "Yeah, I have a pretty good idea where I'm going. I've met with the Giants a lot lately, and I think I've got a good
thing." Brian Daboll.
He said he loves all that coaching staff and Brian Daboll specifically. So
mentioned liking Mr. Tisch.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with J.J. McCarthy tonight, and maybe he's the future with the Giants.
I'm sure Daniel Jones loved hearing that.
I bet Daniel Jones made some texts and phone calls today after hearing that, but you know, that's the craziness
so
of the draft.
Your division with your team, the Cowboys, could get Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy in it.
Sure could. A lot of new. That scares
and
me.
You already have Jalen Hurts in it.
Sure. Yeah, it scares me. Jaden Daniels going to
That'll be fun on our quarterback list when we break that out around July 4th.
Mm-hmm. It will be. And you never know. Johnny, we always do our quarterback rankings, and for that division, it's not uncommon for me to throw a backup in there, you know, because some of these quarterbacks, not as good as some people think, you know.
Off the grid with the backup, always fun.
You're not a Cowboy.
Only list four.
How good are you? Yeah, only four you can list. Only four teams, only four quarterbacks you list. But in my opinion, if you're not a Cowboy, how good are you? Honestly, I mean,
Brian,
bigger in Texas.
Where the tissue at, man? We're gonna be here for you,
right here. Tissues right here.
Yeah, they're still there.
Thank you, Brett. Have it on standby.
You got tissue handy, but you, Brian?
I do. I have the tissues.
We'll be here. We'll be here January 10th when it's a trail of tears.
Yep, that's right. Well, let's go ahead and get to a break. When we come back, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
We are Real Sports Talk. Sports 56 WHBQ. Available on your radio dial at 560 AM and 98.5 FM, as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, "Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, stay tuned in to Real Sports Talk. Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
Or a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
Well, my big number today, I'm back to the NFL draft. Obviously, draft day, how could you not have an NFL draft big number? I saw this morning, and I thought it was extremely interesting. 8.1 is my big number. That is a percentage. There's a lot of percentages in here.
The decimal point, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, you got to love it. There are going to be a lot of percentages, a lot of decimal points in here. Just stick with me.
Okay, we'll ride with you.
Since 1967, which is the start of the modern era of the NFL draft, 130 quarterbacks have been drafted in the first round. 46.9%, that's 61, have won a playoff game as a starter, according to NFL research. 44.6%, that's 58, have garnered Pro Bowl honors. But only 8.1% of the first-round quarterbacks drafted since 1967, that's only 13, have won a Super Bowl as a starter.
Great number.
Thank great you. Number, Brian.
Thank you. Thank
this been a common draft era.
The
Super Bowl era, and I'd mentioned the Super Bowl era earlier with the Bears. That's just the verbiage now, and eventually, I'm afraid we'll just forget about Otto Graham and Johnny Unitas and those teams, and that happens, I guess.
Yep.
My big number is four. It's the number of first number one overall picks the host cities had, Detroit.
Mm.
How many times Detroit's had the number one pick?
Wow.
And that is four times. That's ever. That goes way back even to the very beginning.
Oh,
they picked number one overall in 2009 with Matthew Stafford from Georgia. In 1980 with Billy Sims, running back from Oklahoma. 1950, and he's listed as end, and he won the Heisman Trophy as an end, Leon Hart from Notre Dame. And in 1943, another Heisman Trophy winner from Georgia, running back Frankie Sinkwich. Next year's host, the Packers. Get ready for this one. I may break it back out next year.
Ooh.
They've had two overall number ones, only two.
Wow.
Randy Duncan, quarterback from Iowa in 1959, never played a down with the Packers. Went to the AFL, to the Dallas Texans. And in 1957, Heisman Trophy winner, the Golden Boy, Paul Hornung.
Well, that's a good pick, Paul Hornung. Wow, that's hard to believe. I mean, I know the rich history of Packer football, but only two number one overall picks.
They're rarely bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
That bad.
It's honestly, hate to say this, sorry Detroit, but Detroit only having four is kind of surprising.
Isn't it for as bad as they be?
I hate to run them down because they're getting better, but that's surprising.
And of those four players, only Matthew Stafford, not a Heisman Trophy winner. Billy Sims won it.
Yeah.
He's the one every year at the ceremony. It's going, Boomer!
That's right. Yeah,
that's him for the younger crowd. Great player, too.
Yeah.
Leon Hart and Flatfoot Frankie Sinkwich.
Wow, that is really, really interesting. But no, I'm really excited for the draft, and I think you know, everyone gets excited about it, you know, once we get around to it. And right now we've got a lot of guys starting to make their way into the building, you know, for the draft.
They are.
Green room. Adunze right now.
Who has the bad green room night?
It's
always
question.
One.
It's a great question.
It is always one. One person.
Johnny, it is. It happens.
Let's
somebody
see.
Every year.
Do I have a list of the people that are going to be there?
You know the great Billy Sims story from when he was in high school in Hooks, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
If you drive to Dallas, after you clear Texarkana, you see the Hooks exit. Hooks Hornets. He's number one high school running back in the country as 11th grader. Everybody wants him. And Oklahoma's playing Colorado. And they're up like 48-0 at halftime. And Barry Switzer asked a GA, says, Is a payphone handy? Is there a payphone anywhere? Yeah, coach, actually, there's one right outside the locker room. He calls Billy Sims at work in Hooks, Texas. Billy Sims is working at a gas station on the weekends to make and save some money before he goes off to college next year. And he goes, hey, we're kicking Colorado's you-know-what this time next year. You're going to be in this locker room with us, and we're going to be kicking the rear end again with you.
Oh, that's hilarious. Wow. That's
that was Barry Switzer.
Good old payphone. How about that?
At a payphone.
Weird enough, this is now the second reference to a payphone on these airwaves today. John started talking about a payphone.
Gotta be kidding me.
Earlier today,
I didn't catch you in here, John. I'm sorry.
Much different conversation about a payphone with John. But either way, did not see payphone being brought up.
Yeah,
twice
there
today.
You go.
So scratch that off the bingo card today. Before we get to a break, I do want to bring this up since we're about to talk Tigers with Greg Gaston. Jason Munns tweeted out about an hour ago. He updated a story about Jaden Quaintance, the five-star. We talked about him earlier. Postponed his visit to Memphis, and Jason Munns talks in this story that it was 100% the source he's talked to was postponed on the Tigers' end, that just everybody's schedule, it wasn't going to be able to work out. So now it sounds like between Jason Munns' great reporting and then some other reporting that has taken place since then on a national level, Jaden Quaintance will visit Arizona State this weekend, and then he will visit Memphis at some point next week. So okay. It looks like he'll visit next week, and a lot of people will tell you that being the last visit is a good thing. So maybe getting Arizona State.
You want to go first or last?
Absolutely. So maybe this is a good thing for the Tigers. But let's go ahead and get to a break. When we come back, we're talking Tigers with Greg Gaston.